In the Wild West world of podcasting, there is one podcast that is authentic and genuine and continues to stand tall in its originality. Based on a passion for his guests, their work, and his love of podcasting, Derek Thomas and Monday Morning Critic Podcast get amazing, diverse, unique guests found nowhere else. The variety and quality are endless. There is something for everyone. Derek Thomas is the hero you deserve. He's a silent guardian, a watchful protector. Welcome to Monday Morning Critic Podcast. Here is Derek Thomas.
Perfect. Derek Thomas, Monday Morning Critic. How are you guys doing today?
Good.
Great.
How are you?
Great. Thanks for talking to us.
So I have to think of myself, not being arrogant as a cinephile, and I think I my knowledge of movies is solid. Dan, it took me, I am stunned that I didn't realize how strong your acting career was. Like, I knew about it, but I didn't realize how solid it was before you started kind of involving yourself in writing. And I'm almost embarrassed that you were Val Goldman in Birdcage, and I completely forgot that. And I am so embarrassed that I kind of had a slip of a mind. I couldn't believe it.
It's a long time ago, so don't flagellate yourself too much.
but it's just such an iconic, you know, movie, right? I mean, you've had work with Robin. Morris had work with Robin. I mean, it's just weird how things kind of work out in the end. It's
Yeah. Well, not for him. I mean, it's the saddest story. He was such a talented man and he got afflicted by something really terrible.
Yeah. I mean, and I also have to say, before we get into that, I mean, I knew you had written, The Foxcatcher and Capote. I totally forgot you were nominated for two Academy Awards. Like, now I'm starting to think, do I really know anything? Like, at this point, am I on the same planet as you guys? Like, so, yeah, I mean, you guys are clearly both established writers, and I can't believe I had a slip of the mind on that as well.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, like, when I started working for Dan, I only knew him as a writer, and I had seen him and stuff, but I didn't know it was him. And when I would tell people that's who I was working with, they would say, oh, he was the guy from The Birdcage. From The Birdcage? So it was kind of I knew him as this great writer. First, I didn't know he had done all this acting, even though he's worked with a ton of directors that I know in New York in the theater, and that I would find out later. But yeah, he has an incredible acting resume. It's kind of crazy.
And it's amazing how far ahead The Birdcage was. I mean, it's so, even with, you know, Val with parents, like trying to hide them, it's like, but anyways, we're not here to talk Birdcage. I want to talk about this wonderful series. Guys, how difficult is it to take literary pieces and adapt them to screen? I mean, obviously you both have experience with that. How difficult is that? Because I mean, I see these wonderful actors carrying out these lines, but not always in the same text. You guys have a very difficult job. I mean, in some cases, you know, Jeff had worked for Aaron Sorkin, a Newsroom, and Sorkin had enough. He did so much writing on Newsroom. He's like, this is so arduous. Just your take on the process itself.
We had a very different process, you know, first season, second season. You're right. First season was a lot of adaptation of Philip Meyer. Philip Meyer wrote a terrific novel. And we hewed fairly closely to it, morphing some storylines and setting up some real cliffhangers in the hope of getting a second season. And the excitement of getting a second season, it felt very, very different to us because we were allowed to kind of jump off into the unknown and really accelerate the story and put these characters that we knew very well into accelerating story and serious jeopardy and conflict with each other and bring in new characters as well. So it felt like two very different, it's called something different. It's called Broken Justice because it really feels like a new chapter. It's a different show than it was the first season, while it has many of the same characters. That was exciting to do, and it was really interesting to do both halves of it. I don't know, Adam, if you want to add anything to that.
Yeah, there's something I think, you know, I'm also a novelist, and I've never adapted one of my things for anything, and I do feel beholden to people who are alive, you know, like Philip Meyer is alive. And so there is a little anxiety going into it, going like, well, I'm really got to take care of him. I'm the custodian. We are the custodians of his creation in some ways. And there's a little bit of pressure. And I think for me, I had to kind of divest in myself of that responsibility of caring too much because I come from fiction first and theater first. And I think it freed me up a little bit to think about it as creators, you know, characters that were that existed that we could take on a slightly different journey. You have to give yourself permission to do that. And hopefully you do it with respect and you try to keep the DNA of those characters intact. And I think we did. As Dan said, we did depart somewhat from, in particular, Isaac's journey in season one. His journey away from Buell is different than the novel. And we explored his sexuality in a way that was not dramatized in the novel in the same way. But that was a great pleasure. And we tried to think about how Isaac, what the DNA, what his brain, what his psychology would permit us to do.
Yeah. And I feel like the path, great answer, by the way. I feel like the path of American Rust should not have been this difficult. I feel like it should not have been bounced around. Like, I mean, obviously things happen out of your control, but I feel like it's too good a show for all this to happen. I guess some of it, again, wasn't intentional, but part of me feels like Showtime might have tapped out early. It's such a great show. And I don't like when people compare it to Mayor of Easttown, because I very much think American Rust has established its own legs. It's its own creature. It's not like this or like that. But I don't know. I feel like personally, the show has deserved a better fate. We're back on track. And I guess that's all that matters now.
It's all that matters to us. Yeah. I going back to something of that Adam said, Adam is a terrific novelist. He has, I just have to say this, an absolutely incredible novel being published this month. Called Wolf at the Table. It seriously, you cannot put it down. So I just want to say that he gave it to me to read it. And you know, someone gives you their novel to read, you go, oh fuck, I hope I like this. And I could not put it down. I think I shocked him when I like called him 3 days later and told him how much I loved it.
Yeah. Yeah. And your thoughts on the show's journey itself, either one of you.
Go ahead, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, we loved the show. We loved season one. We loved working with those actors and we loved creating those characters. It was really disappointing. You know, we had a great relationship with some of those executives at Showtime. They were very much behind the show. It wasn't, I don't think it was within their decision-making power at that time. I don't know what happened, but we're just really grateful that, you know, Katie O'Connell took it out. She's one of the executives from Boat Rocker. She was an EP. She took it out again and she found a home at Amazon, and Freevee was part of it in the beginning and still and was all the way through. And now we're with Prime Video, and like, we're just really, really happy. You know, one thing that I want to say that we always talk about, which is really important, is that Jeff Daniels, without his enthusiasm and his belief in the show, we wouldn't be here. You know, he's the big horse. He's the one who brought Dan the book. He's the one who has believed in us. He's the one who showed up every day on set. He's one of the hardest working actors, one of the classiest actors I've ever worked with. And he really, really sits behind this and like wants this to be in existence. Without that, we wouldn't be here.
Yeah, he's terrific. And Maura Tierney might be the most underrated actor on the planet. I mean, all she does is just dominate every performance she's in. I mean, do you guys see it the same way?
Oh, of course. I mean, when we got the opportunity to work with her, we're thrilled. She's got such a long career plan. I mean, so many different things, from comedy to drama to kind of does a bit of both in this. She has a really strong sense of character. And she's just wonderful. She's wonderful on the show.
Yeah. My hope is that I want people to get into the show. I think that's the first step, because it's a really good show. But I feel like it's got to be easier. I hope Prime uploads that first season, because you could get the second season, you know, eventually. But I want people to be access this wonderful show. Two last questions. A very underrated actor in those first couple episodes moving forward. Bill Camp is another one who just, when he gets on screen, it's just like, he's a show stealer. He's a scene stealer. You guys see it the same way?
Yeah, we worked with Bill on The Looming Tower. He played a major character on that for us. And of course, we went to him immediately. I've known him in the theater in New York City since the early 90s. And he's like one of the great actors we have. You know, we joked about season two in the writer's room. We're like, we got to bring Bill back and just have him play somebody else, like a Norwegian FBI agent or something. Like, we have to give him something else to do. He's just someone you want to be around. He sets a tone on set. He was so great with the younger actors who might've been a little less experienced in terms of just like giving them little pointers and helping set the mood and the tone on set. He's a very, very generous actor. And like, you know, I don't know very many takes that I saw in the editing room. I don't know very many takes that didn't work. Like, he's just one of those people who delivers every single take, and such a pleasure to work with.
You know, and the last thing I'll say is, it's so interesting with this show, with other shows, with movies, it's amazing the disconnect between critics and fans. Like, fans overwhelmingly love this show. And I feel like critics are kind of out of touch with what is good. Like, I feel like the people speak, their voices are loud, it's heard, they clearly love the show. But critics are, I feel like, are, again, maybe like me on my planet, like on this planet. I don't know. I just feel like this is a show that people, once they get involved in, once they get absorbed in, will completely love it.
I hope you're right. And thank you for that very much. I do think that Prime has the ability to reach a much wider audience than we did at the last place. And I hope people give it a chance. This first season will be available same day that this drops.
Good. So perfect.
People can watch, you know, all, what do we have? 9 first season? Is that what it was?
9 and 10 in the new season.
Yeah. So you can all watch all 19 in 24 hours if they want to. It's got a new home, and I hope we stay here. You know, we would love to do a third one.
Yep. I bought it for $7. It's a bargain. Guys, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to Derek Thomas and Monday Morning Critic Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you can also connect with Monday Morning Critic on Instagram and Facebook, MDM Critic on Twitter, subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever podcasts are found. All episodes available, www.mmcpodcast.com.